Welcome to On Delmarva. I'm your host, Mark Steiner. Every week, you'll hear us right here on WEAA as we follow the stories that affect the land and the communities of Delmarva. This week, we'll take a look at the controversial lawsuit that has rocked the farming and environmental communities around Delmarva. The Assateague Coastal Trust and the Waterkeeper Alliance have brought a suit against Purdue Farms and the Hutchin family, who operate a chicken farm for the large poultry company. The Hutchins are accused of illegally discharging pollution into the Pocomoke River from chicken manure piled next to a ditch on their property. First, we'll talk with Professor Raina Steinzer of the University of Maryland School of Law. She's also president of the Center for Progressive Reform, and she'll tell us why she believes the suit is important for the health of our waterways. And then we'll hear from chicken farmer Lee Richardson, who has organized fundraisers for the Hutchin family and whose family has been farming on the shore for five generations. First, let's get you home safe with WEAA traffic, and then we'll be right back with Raina Steinzer. Welcome back to On Delmarva. I'm your host, Mark Steiner. Up first, here's our interview with University of Maryland professor Raina Steinzer. Raina, I guess one of the issues that people kind of have a quandary about is this whole lawsuit that was brought in against the Hutchin family, family farmers, and the and Purdue. Was the issue of the responsibility of Purdue. And I think that, in many ways, might go to the heart of what the battle's about. People focus on Purdue but don't know why, and they focus on the Hutch family because it's a farm. But really, it seems to me the core of this issue has to do with Purdue.
That's exactly right. That's the goal of this case, which is one of several that have been brought across the country. Let me explain how the industry is structured. Purdue hires a group of contract farmers, many of whom exist at sort of the margins. They have to take other jobs to support their families through the winter and so forth. But Purdue hands them the chicks, the medicine, the food, and a detailed set of instructions. And then they raise the chicks, and then Purdue takes them back. And one aspect of the way this arrangement is handled is that the farmer, who doesn't have many assets, becomes responsible for the chicken manure, and Purdue escapes any liability for it. So for a long time, people have been saying, a catchphrase to sum it all up is, if you own the chicken, you should own the manure. That's not how people usually say it.
Yeah, really?
It's a family radio program.
Right. That's good. No, but, but on the other hand, Purdue will argue that they are what is known in the chicken business as an integrator, that their responsibility is not what happens once they put the chickens on the ground with the farmer who raises the chickens for them.
Well, that is a convenient changing of terms, but I would argue that from an economic point of view, Purdue is in the best position to get these costs built into the process, because when the manure runs off into the water and causes dead zones and algal blooms and ruins fishing in the bay and makes it impossible for people to swim in the rivers, that's something that Purdue should be factoring into its equation when it takes the chickens back and sells them.
One of the arguments that some farmers have made is that this particular suit brought by the Riverkeepers and the University of Maryland Environmental Law Clinic is anti-farmer, that the real issue here is chasing the poultry industry, which is the economic engine of the Eastern Shore and Delmarva, off of Delmarva.
Well, that actually is an argument that doesn't fit with my understanding of these suits, because they've been brought in other states and they're brought under a federal law. So I agree it would certainly be much better to pass national legislation that applied uniform standards. But in the absence of that, any of these lawsuits, they can be brought anywhere. It's not just Maryland farmers who are being singled out.
Well, it was interesting. Someone said in another conversation we had the other week as we were exploring the world of farms and pollution in the water, and it was an environmentalist who said this. Might have even been Tom Horton, if I remember correctly, on the air, was that even if you got all the farms in the Eastern Shore to clean up their practices and to have zero nitrogen phosphorus in the rivers in the bay coming from Maryland farms, that until you address what's going on in Virginia, Pennsylvania, and New York, the bay will never be clean because that's where most of it's coming from.
That's sort of, though, not to disagree with Tom because, you know, obviously, you know, he's right at some level, but that shouldn't be a justification for not starting with small steps. I mean, that's sort of, unless we do everything at once, we can't do anything, which is not the best approach. There actually are other states that are trying to cope with the issue of chicken farms, which are in many cases called concentrated animal feeding operations, if they're really large. And there's a uniform federal rule that applies to all of them. And some states are actually doing a better job than Maryland in keeping track of them. So I wouldn't – the national law needs to be updated, no question. We need the other states to cooperate with us, no question at all. But everybody has to start somewhere.
And we're talking about – we use this term as the concentrated –
animal feeding operations,
that's CAFOs.
Just beautiful federal bureaucraties.
It is. CAFOs.
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 Sounds like an, you know, sort of a spaceship.
But when I first heard it, I thought they were talking about a kind of chicken to eat.
Oh, a new chicken. Have you called McDonald's? I'm kidding.
That's right. Now, another argument we had in talking to farmers, and I'm talking to farmers who are not CAFO farmers, who don't work for Purdue with Purdue chickens or Tyson chickens, and some organic farmers that are trying to do things differently over on the shore and on Delmarva, was they thought it was counterproductive to bring the lawsuit against a family farm like Hudson. And they said the lawsuit should be, if it was against Purdue, it might have gotten more ground among the people, but because you went after the farms, people are going to circle the wagons around family farmers.
You know, we've heard this argument for many years now. The suit was brought, including Hudson Farm, because the riverkeepers alleged, and this will have to be resolved by the trial court, that the Hudson Farm was doing the wrong thing with its manure. And Purdue was brought in on the theory that it controls what happens at the Hudson Farm. So ultimately, the two have to be in the case together to get to the point of who controls the operations that go on there. I do have sympathy for the farmers, but I don't think that they have the privilege of polluting the bay because they say they can't afford not to. The bay is a benefit to all of us, a very important economic benefit to this state. And 40% of nutrient loading in the bay comes from agriculture. And we simply can't afford to continue to have this go on. I mean, I don't get to say I don't want to pay for sewage treatment anymore because I'm a middle-class person. I pay for sewage treatment. Sewage treatment plants have done as much as they can in many cases to prevent pollution from the bay. And this is a trillion-dollar resource for us. So, you know, while I think the lawsuit is aimed at focusing the economic pressure at the level most able to deal with it, and that is Purdue. I'm not sure I follow this. I'm a small farmer, so I can do what I want. I think that takes it a bit too far.
Of course, Purdue claims that it owns no factory farms and that families that raise poultry for Purdue are independent farmers.
Very convenient. This is the only industry in America that is not held responsible for its own waste.
A $4 billion industry.
Yes. So it's a rationalization. I understand it. It was set up deliberately. I mean, you know, an analogy which has been stopped is long time ago when I was working on Capitol Hill, we had a situation where we were making service stations, many of whom are run by sort of mom-and-pop people, do something about their leaking underground storage tanks because the tanks were rusting and they had holes in them and it was getting into the groundwater. People couldn't drink the groundwater.
Right.
And what the oil companies immediately did was insist that the moms and the pops buy the station from them for a dollar so that they wouldn't be responsible for the leaking tanks. And then, of course, mom and pop don't have the money to clean up the groundwater. And that is exactly what started to happen around the country. But Congress didn't back down from saying we have to clean up these tanks. We can't afford to have gasoline floating in the water we drink. And that's what is going on with the Bay. I mean, we've had 20 years where the Bay has made no progress in terms of becoming cleaner, restoring its quality. We've seen governors after governors stand in picturesque locations with their hair blowing in the wind and promise us we're going to have a clean Bay. And we haven't accomplished it yet. It's time to get serious about it. We can't afford to lose this resource that all of us in Maryland depend on.
Well, I know this is not the job of the lawyers, nor the job of river keepers, though in some senses it is maybe of the latter. But in the last year, if I had this right, some 570 million chickens were raised on Maryland's eastern shore, a part of Delmarva. That's just on Maryland's eastern shore. It's a huge industry. If this lawsuit is, say, is successful, well, let me take a step backwards before I get to the 570 million chickens. What do you think is the result? What would be the result if this lawsuit is successful? What would it mean? What would it change?
I hope that it would mean that Purdue would start working with the farmers to find better ways to manage the manure. That's what I hope. And, you know, Purdue is a pretty innovative company. When it wants to put its mind to things, it can do very, very wonderful things. For example, it has eliminated arsenic in chicken feed. Arsenic was fed to chickens to prevent bacterial infections. The problem is it then gets into the manure and it runs off into the bay and it can cause serious public health problems. Purdue got rid of it and deserves commendation and applause for that. And I feel confident that if this case prevails, things are not going to be as bad as Purdue predicts they will, and that Purdue will find a way to work with the farmers to minimize pollution and keep the manure out of open holes in the ground near a stream. Seems to me there are some pretty simple, straightforward steps that could be taken that would really improve the situation, and that what we need is to have Purdue on our side to get that kind of work done.
I remember interviewing State Senator Andy Harris when he was running for the congressional seat that he just won. And one of the things he said in that interview was that if this lawsuit goes forward, if Purdue loses this in federal court, then the chicken farms will leave the Eastern Shore and end up in Brazil.
Brazil?
Because it will be outsourced, like everything else is outsourced in America, because that's where chicken farmers are having their fastest growth, apparently, or in certain Latin American countries.
And then we have to pay for the ships to get them back here, huh?
I suppose so.
And that's going to be more expensive than buffer crops. You know, generally, when we look into this kind of claim that environmental regulations drive people offshore, they're very rarely supported by the research that economists then do. It's just not – people move to various places because of energy costs, transportation, wages, and we certainly do have a serious challenge confronting us with globalization and the loss of American jobs, and I don't mean to make light of that at all. But it seems to me that between moving your chicken farm to Brazil or stopping pollution – with a buffer crop on the eastern shore, I would sure, if it was my money, I would pick the staying on the eastern shore and doing these remedies that are so accessible.
One of the reasons that people call it anti-farm or anti-farmer is because they're asking the judge to assess a $37,500 a day fine for the farm for violating the Federal Clean Water Act. And they're saying that will just drown a farmer, that will destroy the farmer, that will drive this farmer out of business, and maybe others as well. Is it excessive?
You know, it's up to the judge. The plaintiff pleads the case. The judge decides the penalty. And it's up to the judge to make that determination. But let's look at it from the perspective of a farmer who has tried to do something about his manure rather than leaving it out in the open ground. Is it fair to have somebody who's ignored the law and isn't trying to do something to prevent the pollution? Is it fair for him to get off scot-free? Or should he have to pay a penalty in comparison to someone who made an effort? You know, in the end, the judge will make the decision, and the riverkeeper and the farmer will have their day in court. But I don't think we can afford to, you know, in this context, any more than we could in the context of speeding with your car or assaulting someone on the street or doing any other misdeed that is illegal. I don't think we can afford to just let it pass. Otherwise, we have no incentive to follow the law.
What about the responsibility or role of the Maryland Department of the Environment in all this?
You know, the Maryland Department of the Environment is underfunded. In 2001, a lot of people don't realize this. The agency's budget went from $225 million to $165 million. So that was a huge cut. It was done under Governor Glenn Denning. And MDE has never recovered from that. And they're now at the point where they sometimes get so discouraged because they can't even begin to do a decent job. So they just, you know, they have a very hard time sort of figuring out where to go. So that's the first thing I would say about them. The second is I do believe that under the last three secretaries, there hasn't been enough emphasis on enforcement. And what I mean by that is taking the requirements that apply today instead of, you know, inventing and reinventing new and different rules, just take the basic meat and potato requirements of traditional laws like the Clean Water Act and find cases where people are violating the laws and prosecute. We pay taxes because we know we could get audited. We don't speed because we know there are cameras and cops. We will not dump pollutants into the bay in excessive amounts if we think that we might get caught and have to pay a penalty. It's very simple common sense on that basis. And when people say, you know, they hate regulation, I don't think they mean this kind of regulation. I think you would be hard-pressed to find anyone who said, I don't really care if there's a dead zone in the bay. You know, we don't need it. I want to spend all my time for the rest of my life in downtown Baltimore, as terrific as downtown Baltimore sometimes can be.
I wonder, you know, when as the president now of the Center for Progressive Reform, which is your new title, right?
Yes.
Yes. Not so new, but that's your title now.
I'm also a law professor at the University of Maryland.
You're still there. You're still.
Yes.
Is there a way to? Are there other ways to approach this other than lawsuits, in terms of changing changing what happens? To create some change in terms of the pollution of the waters and the destruction of the environment from nitrogen, phosphorus, and all the rest. Because we know farms are part of it. We know that farms across the entire watershed are part of it. We also know that increasing people are saying that it's runoff from not just roads and sewage plants, and perhaps we don't fully understand what happens in terms of the lawns and the chemicals and fertilizers we're putting on our own properties to make our places look home beautiful. I mean, I'm wondering what has to be done other than lawsuits, or are lawsuits the only way to struggle and fight this battle?
Well, it would be much better if Congress had its act together, and if the money were available to help with the cleanup. Congress needs and has needed for many years to rewrite the Clean Water Act and make it apply fairly to all the sources. And I personally favor subsidies to help the farmers out, the ones who really can't afford it. But we're in a situation now where Congress is pretty dysfunctional, and where we have sort of selective screaming about the deficit, and where we can't afford to let this resource go, because the longer we leave it dirty, the harder it will be to clean up. There's a real price to be paid to put cleanup of the Chesapeake Bay on hold. So, yes, there are better ways. The question is whether they're practical at this point.
There are people who, in the course of interviewing about this lawsuit, who have said this lawsuit could be, in terms of from the environmental perspective and the perspective of the environment, one of the most important legal decisions to come to be made.
I agree with that.
Why?
Because it will hopefully break the back of the problem that Purdue and other integrators are simply allowed to contract away all responsibility for their waste. Again, as I said, the only industry in the country that's allowed to do that. So it's pretty important. You know, there's been other very important developments in Maryland, and, you know, this one has kicked up a lot of controversy, and we shouldn't confuse controversy for significance, but it is an important case.
That's interesting what you just said, not to confuse controversy for significance.
Right.
Which is the greater in this case? You think the
so the controversy has elevated the significance. it's actually a case that is not the first one in the country by a long shot, and not as out there as the farmers would argue.
But it seems to me the fundamental, I mean, when you, the one aspect of this case that makes it maybe more significant, but I don't know about the other cases in Iowa and Pennsylvania and in Illinois, Indiana, or wherever they've been taking place, but that if the ruling is that Purdue is responsible as or more than the farmer, him or herself, that would be one of the most significant parts of this lawsuit from your perspective, if that perspective of environmental law and environmentalists, if that happened.
Yes, definitely. To hold Purdue responsible for the chickens that it asked the small farmer to raise would be very significant.
Do you think it would fundamentally begin to change the relationship between the farmer and Purdue if that happened?
Yes, I would hope so. You know, there is Environment America managed to gather 50 signatures from farmers down there who support the case.
Who are Purdue farmers?
I don't think they were all Purdue farmers, mm-hmm. but they did recognize the need to do something about the Chesapeake Bay. and this as a law reform change. They finally have, they've felt very strongly about it. So I don't think that that everyone on the Eastern Shore is unilaterally opposed to this the way that sometimes the most strong advocates claim.
That would be
seen evidence that that isn't so.
Now you've put me on another path, is to find those farmers to sign the petition. See who they are. Going to be interesting. So before we leave, have we left anything out from your perspective in this conversation?
I think it's been a really good, pretty comprehensive conversation, and I appreciate very much the opportunity to be on the show. These are very important issues, and it's very urgent that we catch up our efforts with our rhetoric about the Bay. It's been languishing for too long.
Raina Steinzer, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Professor Raina Steinzer of the University of Maryland School of Law. She's also president of the Center for Progressive Reform. Stay with us, because after this short break, we'll hear from chicken grower Lee Richardson. You're listening to On Del Marva on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to On Del Marva. I'm your host, Mark Steiner. Lee Richardson of Willards, Maryland, learned chicken farming from his father and grandfather. His family has been farming on the Delmarva Peninsula for five generations, and he joins us today to discuss why he thinks the lawsuit against the Hudson family and Purdue Farms is a mistake.
Lee, welcome. Good to have you with us.
How you doing?
I'm real well, man. How are you?
I'm doing good.
So how did – I know we're going to talk about the lawsuit and the controversy around the lawsuit that the waterkeepers and others brought against the Hudson family and against Purdue. But I'm curious, what was your, before we get into that, what your family's kind of sojourn was getting into this kind of farming, this kind of raising chickens in this way?
Oh, well, it started back with my grandfather, and it was, more or less we used to grow chickens. They were pre-Romaner, had a little chicken coop and all that. And then, as population's grown, they had a demand for more chicken and more chicken. So in our area, the poultry companies kind of what they call integrated and came up with a way that, we owned the chicken house and raised the chickens, and then they took the chicken and sold them to market. It eliminated us having to trying to get them to market, find a market, and all that. It kind of streamlined everything to more or less feed the world, feed the population is kind of like the way I see it. So it was a little bit easier on us. We didn't have to find our own feed. They provided it. They did all the research on how to, as far as breeding the chicken and growing the chicken and what it took for feed and stuff like that. And, our job was just to keep the air to them and the feed and water and kind of like tend to them that way. It simplified things for the American farmer, at least in the poultry industry. It made it simpler for us and more tolerable. And let's put it this way. When my grandfather was tending chickens when they first started out and it was integrated then, I would have never built chicken houses. But then automation and things became different and it was a little easier to be able to do it and keep up with it. And the reason we've gotten bigger, a lot of poultry growers, is to make enough money, to survive and to keep up with the population as far as growth. They need more chickens and more chickens, and the ones that could tend to more, they did.
So when you heard about this lawsuit,
yes,
and what was your reaction to it when you heard that this was going on? I mean, I'll ask more specific questions about what you think the real issues are, but what was your reaction when you heard about the lawsuit?
Well, initially, I wanted more information. The water keepers, I really don't have much faith in as far as for the environment, mainly because I was at a meeting a few years ago when Mr. Kennedy came down here and spoke. He was the president, I think, of water keepers at the time. Maybe
Robert Kennedy.
Robert Kennedy.
Right.
And after hearing his speech, I realized that, you're dealing with a group that has no common sense for the poultry industry or you know, what it takes, or, you know, even what's going on as far as, you know, a lot of negativity. They seem to have a thing against the poultry companies themselves personally, and I don't know why, but after hearing that speech, you know, I realized it was a group that really didn't, I really didn't feel like they were for the environment. They were more, they're just literally against the poultry companies, what I felt like. So then when I heard the lawsuit, I'm thinking, oh, here we go. This is the beginning, you know, and I wanted more details. Now, as I got more details, and of course I saw the picture and you know, realized it wasn't chicken manure. If it had been chicken manure, to be honest with you, I really wouldn't have had a problem with the situation, because, you know, we're far enough along now and educated enough that obviously, you know, it would have been a mistake. When I found out it was the lime amended sludge from Ocean City, that they've been trying to even get us to buy some, and, you know, I kind of was aware of what the material was, then it was a whole new ball game. And, of course, they had Purdue on the lawsuit, which made no sense to me whatsoever. I couldn't understand why they were suing Purdue over this. And then when I found out it wasn't chicken manure, that was even worse. Why was Purdue involved? And so, you know, it becomes angering then, and, you know, and a lot of upset a lot of farmers. You know, you're just dealing with a radical group that doesn't want to understand this, you know, what goes on. They, you know, and granted, they check water quality, and obviously if there's an issue, a farmer's going to fix it, you know, and I really don't, you know, it's in court still, so until everything comes out, I've not heard all the details and what the water samples found and what was in it, whether it had anything to do with poultry manure from another location, I don't know. But it's, you know, it's aggravating that, you know, this group doesn't want to understand poultry. You know, I've met Kathy Phillips at a meeting and heard her talk and stuff like that, you know, and literally they would love to see the poultry industry leave the Eastern Shore and be done, gone. They want us all to go back raising chickens in a coop, roaming around the yard, you know, and, you know, so each farmer might be able to feed, you know, a few people a year or more, you know, throughout the year, and that would make them happy. Where the chicken's going to come from at that point for the people in the city, I don't know. You know, I know there's got to be a balance. You know, I'm certainly not going to go out there and say, go out there and pollute to feed the hungry or feed the people, but there is a medium, and, you know, I think we're practically already there at a point, you know, because it's we keep getting regulation after regulation, but and then we keep getting told the bay's not changing. So if we're doing all this stuff and making such great improvements, why hasn't the bay changed, you know, if we're the cause? It's aggravating. We get in situations where there's science that proves certain things, but they don't use that. They want to keep testing until they prove what they want to hear. And it's, you know, these are universities. We're not, the farmers aren't funding these universities. They're should be unbiased, you know, and you got five studies that say one thing and one study comes out that's against this, and that's the one they run with. So, you know, it's aggravating. It's upsetting to the point, you know, there's farmers that quit. You know, a few years ago when the housing market hit a boom, several farmers quit growing chickens. They quit farming altogether and sold their land for houses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you couldn't blame them. How could you? You know, it was their way out, you know, and to survive in a different, you know, and they went a different direction. And, but at the same time, is that better for the environment too? You know, there's a lot of environmentalists that would rather see it farmland than houses. So, you know, it gets to be frustrating as a farmer.
Well, if one of the arguments that they make is that let me jump back here, talk about Purdue for a minute. You said earlier you don't know why they were suing Purdue. Well, one of the arguments they're making is that if, in fact, there's a problem, that Purdue is as responsible, if not more responsible, than the farmers themselves, because they supply everything the farmers and they talk about and they pretty much run what you can grow, how many can grow, clearly where it's sold, how they're housed, and all the rest. So that even though they are, as they're calling themselves, integrators, that their contract, I mean, they own the chickens that are raised, they provide all the feed, fuel, litter, medications, vaccinations, and more.
Right.
So the argument being, if there is pollution in the bay, and if some of the nutrient pollution coming to the bay is from those farms, why shouldn't the company like Purdue, which some people see as the parent company, be as responsible as anybody else?
Well, I mean, Purdue, you know, they're making we don't get chickens unless we have a nutrient management plan. We don't have chickens unless we're meeting certain things on our production area. You know, there gets to be a fine line. You know, somebody, I use all my own manure because actually I import manure from other farmers because we tend that much land compared to the chickens we raise. So if I take the manure from that grower, is produced still responsible? I mean, that the grower owns the manure, and that's, you know, there's a few disgruntled growers, maybe a few more, but for the most part, most of the growers want their manure. The ones that don't, you know, Purdue takes it to the agri recycle and uses it. It doesn't cost. It's actually a good deal for the grower that doesn't want it. Can they take it all? No, because, you know, the factory that they built, you know, can only use so much at a time. And I prefer to keep mine and get some from others because it is a, what I feel like is a better material to put on the land as a fertilizer than commercial fertilizer. It breaks down slower. It moves less, you know. I realized that, you know, that you got to understand 20 years ago, 20-plus years ago, you didn't spread manure like you do today. It was spread to the fields closest to the chicken house. The education at that time was that it had no value, to spread it on the land to get rid of it. It built the organics, but that was about it. You know, as years progressed, we came out with better technology to spread it thinner and then get it down the road farther away because we found that, hey, there's a lot of nitrogen and phosphorus and good elements in here, and we saw the crops growing better where we were applying it. So, of course, we tried to cover more land then. And so I really feel like our soils are the we're paying for what we did 25 years ago. But, you know, as the education came out, the farmers adapted, and then the farmers do adapt quickly to new equipment and stuff that makes things more economical and better for the land as far as spreading the manure, you know, to get it down to less tons per acre and more accurate placed. So I like to own my own manure. You know, I want to own it. And mm-hmm. so there becomes a problem when there's a grower that doesn't, some that do. So then there's an argument, it's Purdue's manure. Well, when I signed the contract, I did not sign the contract and said that Purdue owned it. I said that I would take care of it. So it's my responsibility from that point on. So if I sell it to someone, you know, I have to make it's on my plan that they're taking it, so then they're liable for what they do with it. Yeah, granted, I mean, farmers are smart enough and know enough today not to pile it next to a ditch as far as chicken manure, and certainly not should know better than spreading a ditch. You know, I'm not saying there's not any bad apples out there. I mean, obviously they proved that, the EPA or MDE, with some inspections. And they're taking care of it, and those people need to be taken care of. I strongly believe in that. I don't have a problem with that one. But to keep, you know, more and more regulations to the point that we can't pass the cost on, and even Purdue, if it was Purdue's responsibility, they can't pass the cost on to the consumer, because if they have different rules here than they do in the rest of the United States or another, you know, even it may become a global thing with chicken. You know, as things get worse here, they'll start growing them in South America and stuff like that. So then the competition isn't comparable, you know, and wherever is cheapest to grow it, that's where they're going to do it. And then the ones that can't, you know, because of, I'm not saying there shouldn't be any environmental regulations. I think the ones that are in place today are strict enough to accomplish what they want to accomplish and then some. But they don't give time for rules to take effect before they're changing them. And it's a constant battle. But the problem the farmer has is being able to keep up with what's new, what they want now. Tomorrow to be different. And that's my biggest problem. I go to a lot of meetings now instead of working because I'm trying to keep up. What am I supposed to be doing now? You know, what do you require to meet your regulations? You know, and we get done with one regulation, you know, hammering it out, what they want, and then they come out with a whole new one. Or the federal decides they want something else, and it changes everything you just did with the state as far as in the past year, a couple of years.
One of the things that they say is that and I'm curious if you think it's what I'm about to say is true, and if it is true or not true, then how do you address it or deal with it as a farmer? That they said that agriculture is the largest individual source of nutrient pollution in the bay. 38% of the nitrogen, 45% of the phosphorus that goes into the bay comes off of chicken farms, or comes off the COFOs, the large industrial chicken farms, and that's kind of part of the, I guess, the lawsuit. I guess part of the idea of the lawsuit is to make farms and Purdue take more responsibility for that.
Well, I disagree with it. You know, I really, I realize that you have to understand, to come up with these numbers for as far as municipalities and stuff like that and agriculture and all that, it's a model. They use numbers and they model it. In the past year or two, I've been into some meetings to see how they figure out this stuff. And there's a lot of stuff that agriculture is not being accounted for as far as things that they are doing to be conservative as far as soil and phosphorus and nitrogen and all that. So it's not even being put in the model to correct it. Now they're working on it now, finally. Of course, you know, the regulations are here ahead of time, but I think they're going to find that there's a lot less coming from agriculture if they plug into the model correctly, the acres and stuff like that of what's being done. There's a lot of things that, you know, we got credit for it the first year we started, say, for no-till agriculture. We no-till everything now. We got credit the first year we did it. But there's been nothing in the model to say that we've continued to do it for the last 20 years. So there's some credits to be had there that they're not, you know, taking in. If you take municipalities and stormwater from population and add them together, it's actually, from what I understand, is larger than agriculture alone. But they separate those two, so then agriculture is still the biggest. But, you know, I'm not saying there's not improvements that can be made. There will always be improvements made. But I think, you know, they need to take – sometimes they rush things before we can get it figured out how to, you know, solve the problem or make it a better situation. They keep talking that there's an abundance of manure. You've got these groups out there. It's a funny thing. There's farmers that want the manure. I don't understand how there's an abundance. And certainly there's more away from here that want it also, that you've got a lot of farmers farther up the shore that use sludge from Philadelphia. It comes in from other states to our state to fertilize their ground. Well, so obviously if there was that much extra manure, it would be getting trucked. You know, they had to transport program and all that, it certainly would be going there if there was a lot of extra, you know. And Purdue is, you know, they've taken a lot of manure and they pelletize and send it in bags to places and stuff like that. But certainly there's other places that can use it, you know, if there is such an abundance. But I've yet to see this abundance, because if there was such an abundance, I wouldn't be paying for it. So I actually had to buy it, you know.
So do you feel like you are that you and other farmers, you know, who grow chickens for Purdue, are working for yourself or are working for Purdue?
Well,
how do you feel about it?
Kind of a mixed bag there. You know, I'm independent. You know, they're not there 24/7, telling what to do this minute, that minute, and all that. Yeah, there are certain things I have to do, but I mean, it only benefits me to do what they've instructed us to do as far as the chicken, you know, to grow a better bird. And of course we get paid better the better job we do. But, you know, there's other companies, you know, so if I'm with Purdue and just not happy, I'm not forced to stay there, you know, and lose out. I can go to another company. You know, I spent 2 years not doing very well I grow for Purdue now, and I have since I started. And, you know, I had 2 years there, I was on a slump, and there was a new thing that came out that I tried myself. It's called windrowing the manure. So actually I'm taking less manure out of my chicken house between every flock, and it's building up in there to later in to the spring when I can actually spread it. So, you know, I don't need as much storage space. But since I've been doing that, it's a program I started myself, and now, you know, I've moved up the ladder quite a bit. You know, it's been like a total turnaround. But my point is, you know, you get out of it what you put into it to a certain degree. And I know there's some bad luck. You know, I was there for a while, 2 years, you know, I was doing everything I could and couldn't get out. But come find, you know, obviously when I changed my program, it wasn't anything Purdue was doing to me or anything like that. I had a problem in my chicken house, mm-hmm. and it was just something we couldn't find scientifically at the time. But whatever this windrowing is killing in the soil or litter, you know, took care of it. So, you know, yeah, we're working for them in a way, but, you know, I have some freedoms. You know, that I am my own employer. I can leave them at any time I want once that flock I have in and go to another company. Now, over the years, if anything, you know, you could say that the government's probably hurt us to the point now that we're down to three companies that are big players. We have had a new one move into the area, but
who's that? Purdue, Tyson. Who's the other one?
Mount Air.
Uh huh.
Well, we actually, Tyson's not as big right in my area. They're a little farther south, but you know, we have Tyson, Mount Air, Purdue, and then Allen's. Of course, Allen's has been split, and a new company's moved in. So there's four strong, somewhat strong ones in my area. So, you know, it's good now. We used to have seven or eight, but I think somewhat regulations, and some, you know, was economic. Some didn't perform as well. So as every company leaves, like Tyson pulled out for a while, and I think it was because of regulations, they kind of pulled out of our area and went farther into Virginia. But as you have one leave, then you get a little more tied. You know, there's been some disgruntled growers in the past, and not just a handful. I mean, you know, but there was a spell there where a lot of people came, say, maybe from the city or from other places that moved to the area and thought, I want to grow chickens. Well, you know, they jumped into it with both feet, and, you know, it is a big investment to build chicken houses and all that and everything, you know, to survive. And they kind of fell at the mercy of the poultry company because they didn't know really what they were doing. They got into it and spent all this money and all that, and then when things weren't growing well, of course, you know, you pretty much in the beginning, you kind of hold tight to your money because you don't know how you're going to perform, and it makes a big difference. And you see, I wouldn't go out and start trading on the commodities market without some experience or somebody, you know. I can see where those people got in trouble. They list, you know, might have listed a poultry company, but, I mean, I would go work for somebody in the business before I'd start my own, you know, but because I'm there, there's a lot of people that if they went and worked for a chicken farmer for a week or two, they'd probably think twice before they built two, you know, because it probably weren't for them. But once you're in, you know, with that kind of investment, you know, you're kind of stuck there. But that's any business. What makes that any different than any business that I would get into? You know, I was experienced in it because my parents did it and my grandparents, and I knew the business and what it entailed and everything, so I still built. Now, would I build two houses today? No, I wouldn't.
You would not.
Two reasons. The environmentalist, you know, the regulations that they're calling for, and, you know, I spend a lot more time doing paperwork than I do what I like doing as far as the farming and the chickens. And, you know, the chickens aren't my favorite part, but they pay the bill some years. But I don't think you can cash flow a chicken farm now because that it has gotten so expensive to build chicken houses, and that the market, you know, just hasn't kept up with the cost of materials and stuff like that as far as the chicken market. And people don't want to pay a lot for food. And that's the, you know, if people were willing to pay what they pay in foreign countries, we could do a lot of things, you know, as far, there'd be a lot more money to the growers and to the companies, and they could advance, you know, tremendously. But Americans like cheap food, and that's what we're known for as far as inexpensive. Does that mean go out there and ruin the environment to do it? No. But, I mean, we can't, it's not a perfect system. You know, you put the fertilizer or manure out there, we can't control the rainfall, we can't control the weather, you know, so we're at the mercy of nature to a certain degree, so that has to be a factor, you know, that we're not going to control. Can we control the runoff from our production area? Sure. You know, if somebody's cutting a ditch right from their manure shed to drain to a ditch, yeah, we can control that. That's, you know, we've got to stop that. You know, the ones that have done that or whatever, you know, we have to build in grass buffer strips on our production areas and keep the around the manure sheds and around the chicken houses.
When you hear that the when the water keepers and the people who brought the suit sampled the water downriver and it was way beyond the limits allowed for the nutrient pollution. I mean, what do you think that wasn't true, or do you think that they weren't testing?
To be honest with you, I'd love to hear what a neutral person found. You know, I'd love to, you know, if the state took water samples, what did they find and all that. From what I understood, and don't hold me to it, you know, that the numbers were a little bit different when they took them later. I mean, and I really don't think there was a lot that could be changed that quickly and changed the water that quickly. I don't know. You know, I do not trust the water keepers. Flat out, I can tell you that. You know, and I wouldn't trust, you know, water samples that they took and nobody else took. No, I wouldn't trust it. You know, because of their agenda. Their strong agenda is strictly they want to see the poultry companies gone, I feel like. They think, now whether they really think they're that much of a threat to the environment, maybe, I don't know what, a lot of people wonder what their vendetta is against, especially Purdue. Purdue seems to be their mark, and I don't know why, you know, I don't know if there's something in the past that I don't know about or what, but they really seem to have it out for the poultry companies. And
Do you think there is an issue, though, with just too much manure going into the water that's become a not just a source of polluting the water, but that it's just out of control. There's so much of it that there's
I do not feel that way.
You don't feel that way.
I don't see that. And I don't know where, you know, if you see a big pile on the side of the road, you know, and it looks like a huge pile of manure, but if it's going to cover 100, 200 acres, you know, that's not that big of a pile, you know, and we would see these piles. You know, for one thing, used to the piles were kind of strung out down the field. They weren't that, they didn't look that big, but it was probably just as much manure, but they traveled a long distance down the field. And now we pile it up into a taller pile to help. It actually, a manure pile, when piled up correctly, will actually crust over about 6 inches at the most when it rains on it. And it crusts over and forms a shell over it. And the manure, if I pile it now, then next spring when I spread it 6 inches down, it'd be as dry as the day I put it there. It's amazing, but they don't seem to want to understand it. But the point is, you see these huge piles now, it looks like a lot more. I don't know if that's what they see, and they feel like there's a lot more, but there's less, you know, as chicken houses are built, there's also chicken houses going out. They've done away with a lot of the houses here in the last few years because if they weren't big enough or tunnel, what they call tunnel ventilator or something like that. I mean, we have 4 houses that were taken out of production. But the point is I don't see all this abundance manure. If it was such an abundant, I shouldn't be paying the prices I'm paying for it to get it. But, you know, it's getting to the point whether it's justifiable for me to buy it at that price rather than buy a commercial. You know, there is an economic factor there that at one time manure was cheaper to a point. But now by the time I get it, spread it, and, you know, it costs more to spread it than regular commercial fertilizer. So, you know, I don't see this abundance. I don't know where they're getting their numbers.
Do you think that this is the future of farming on the Eastern Shore, or do you think that the way we interviewed Ted Wycliffe just recently, who's a farm, I guess, has been his family for 4 generations outside of Salisbury. Before that, we interviewed Steele Phillips down in Vienna.
I know Ted. Yeah.
Do you think that farmers could survive the way Ted does in more diversified farming? Do you think the future is in the COFOs that you all are involved in?
I think if we all went to that type of farming,
yep,
there's going to be a lot of hungry people. But I don't disagree with what Ted's doing.
Yeah.
He is feeding a niche market, and he is feeding the people that want that. And there is a certain amount of people that want that. And if everybody becomes to the point that they want that, then they better come up with ways that we can do it that way and do it in volume. But the people are going to, you know, they pay more for his food. Now, some of the organic farmers, you know, they jumped on board, you know, with a environmental group saying that, you know, that to kind of like go against the poultry companies and manure and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing is manure is organic, and that's what they use. But is it because it costs them more to grow a pound of chicken than it, you know, free range and all that organically? It's going to cost them more. And there's lots of reasons why that is. And it's expected, but they have to compete with the market that's cheaper chicken, but that's coming from these integrators. But they can't grow the volume of chicken, say, if the integrators were gone. So some of us decide to try to do it on our own and all that. We're not going to be able to meet the demand for chicken in the country. So there's a trade-off. You know, what do you want? You know, and are they totally environmental friendly? I don't think so. You know, they're still putting manure out to grow the organic corn because that's what they can use on organic corn. They're going to have to put it out in the amount that we do. I guess I don't understand where they think they're any better for the environment than we are. Granted, some poultry companies, you know, that there's an arsenic issue. Purdue no longer uses it, is what I've been told. You know, I can't speak for Purdue as far as the feed content,
right.
But we are understanding that Purdue no longer uses arsenic, additive, whatever it is. You know, so, you know, they're trying to make changes to meet that. That is a demand that's wanted by the consumer. So they are trying to change that. They're trying to change, you know, what they put in the feed, you know, as far as we've got some kind of feed we're using now. It's supposed to be vegan, I think it's called, you know, but you know, they're constantly changing, and part of that is because that's what the consumer wants, not because the environmentalists, you know, are pushing them to it. It's what the consumer wants. And, you know, if the consumer changes and they all want it, I don't know how we're going to do it. There's going to be a lot more people getting into farming, you know. And, you know, nobody wants to do this work anymore. You know, that's the other problem. You know, they complain about the immigration, you know, but they're what does a lot of the hand labor now to keep up, say, with vegetables and stuff like that. No, the people don't want to do it in America anymore, except for a handful of us. And we've got to be able to do it to a certain degree to be able to feed everyone. And that's where the issue is. A lot of people don't even realize where the food comes from. But I'm not saying that, you know, don't make any rules on us and just let us free reign and go out there and, you know, obviously, and I'm not even sure, you know, even if we were let to do that, I don't think we would destroy the environment. We have to keep the soil in a certain point and healthy, and the water's healthy, because, number one, there's a lot of farmers that cross over to the water for fishing and stuff like that, and a lot of us love to go out on the bay, just like the city person that wants to go out. But, you know, to say that we're intentionally doing this, you know, they're saying Purdue's intentionally doing it, not the farmer. But, you know, I don't believe that. You know, they're not doing anything. We wouldn't allow it. You know, if we were doing stuff, you know, I'm not to the point that I'm forced to stay in business, that I have to do what the poultry company says to me that I know is going to harm the environment. You know, it's nothing like that. And I think that a lot of farmers, you know, they're pretty strong-willed people that they're not going to put up with that. You know, they would sell out first.
I really appreciate it, Lee. Take care of yourself.
No problem. You have a good one.
One day I'd like to come down and see your farm and just walk with you a little bit.
That'd be fine.
All right, great.
All right, take care.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Farmer Lee Richardson of Willards, Maryland. You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break.